Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. George Anders is one of the founding writers of Bloomberg View, specializing in opinion pieces about the U.S. economy, financial markets, and innovation. He spent two decades as a top feature writer for the Wall Street Journal, where he was part of the team that won a Pulitzer Prize in 1997 for national reporting. He also has written for Fast Company, The New York Times, Parade, Forbes.com, Smart Money, and the Harvard Business Review. He's author of the new book, The Rare Find, Spotting Exceptional Talent Before Everyone Else. George, welcome to Edgewise.
Thank you.
I really like the approach of the book, which is story or narrative based. So let's talk about why you chose that type of approach.
There's a great Ronald Reagan quote: people will absorb statistics, but they change their minds because of stories. Particularly when you're talking about talent and you're talking about hiring, some of these are very compelling stories.
Right.
How someone like J.K. Rowling, who's written probably the most successful commercial book ever, got turned down by four publishing houses, including one that said, everyone's going on vacation and we don't have time to read it. Mm-hmm. And £1 billion of revenue slipped out the door. So when you get people's attention with something like that, you realize that opening your mind to the unusual candidate isn't just a bullet point. It isn't just a slogan. This could be the most important decision your business makes in a decade.
Is finding rare talent more of an art than a science?
Like so many things, when you look at it from a distance, it's all art and mystery. And the closer you get, the more craft there is. Mm-hmm. Perspective matters enormously. There are a lot of things you can do that will improve your odds and will also reduce the penalties for getting it wrong. Part of the reason that sometimes hiring decisions get very constricted and become very cautious is that feeling that if we ever get it wrong, we're in trouble. Mm-hmm. A lot of the organizations that do take chances are very good at taking small chances, whether it's a university with a PhD program where there's a master's track that shoots people out after a year or two and they're gone, or something like General Electric's corporate audit program where it can take 4 or 5 years to go to the top, but there's an exit path, a gentle, well-constructed exit path, mm-hmm. but one that'll get the less successful people doing something else after a year. When you do that, you can take more chances, you can be bolder, because you know that your successes are going to pay off in a big way and your mistakes aren't really going to hurt you.
So to a certain extent, it's a cultural thing.
Absolutely. It's easy to sit at the whiteboard and model what you want to have happen, but it's the cultural elements. How do you approach efficiency? How do you approach risk-taking? What do you really mean when you say creativity? How do you knit teams together? Mm-hmm. Especially as you get bigger, one person can't do all the work. And if you're in a culture that has a strong team-building capability, everyone looks better. If there's no element of team, everyone looks worse.
How do you respond to critics of your approach who might claim that if they were to be a super detail-oriented, they'd never get a job filled?
Depends what kind of job you're trying to fill.
Okay.
If you're looking for toll takers, if you're looking for people to move forklift trucks around, you probably don't need to stress about it to the same degree as if you're running a hospital and trying to get the right head of your cardiac surgery department. It's not just the income that you're paying, it's the amount of responsibility for the organization's destiny. In a lot of organizations, that make-or-break quality is now happening several layers farther down. Mm-hmm. The military talks about the strategic corporal. If you're in Iraq, if you're in Afghanistan, it's not just what the generals and the colonels are doing. There may be some guy commanding six people, but if he's the guy that you're hoping will find bin Laden, he's your most important soldier.
Sure.
The same thing occurs on the business front. If you look at the impact of social media as it makes and breaks trends and things spiral up into incredibly big phenomena suddenly, quickly, without us expecting, you need to have talent at all levels of the organization. You can't just have a few good people at the top and then a lot of drones at the bottom.
Let's pursue that subject of social media. Can and should social media, such as Facebook, LinkedIn, or Twitter, play a role in this search for all-stars?
Yes. It would be like asking 100 years ago, should we use the telephone to help us, or should we use the mail? And I'm struck with some of the new techniques that are coming that integrate two different social media streams. And let me take a moment to tell you what I'm talking about.
Go ahead.
We're all familiar with LinkedIn, where you've got the classic line-by-line bio of, here's what I did in 2005 to 2008, here was my next job. Useful, straight, drill-down, sedimentary core of someone's life. Not a lot of detail on how well they did it or what their projects were. Hmm. Concurrently, you've got people's tweets, or in specialty fields, their postings in PR chat groups, their postings on some of the tech boards. If you read those with a keen eye, you can see who's taking command of one project after another, mm-hmm. whose tweets say, we delivered it on time and under budget, and whose tweets say, you know what, I think I'm about to get fired. Wouldn't it be nice to match the two of those up?
Exactly.
And there are now companies that are setting out to do exactly that. That becomes a very powerful way to identify interesting candidates and to do a first round of filtering so that you're not talking to the people who have great resumes but no ability to execute.
Now, in your book, you give the story which delineates the difference between the master role player and the leader. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. Larry Summers is a well-known figure in three or four different vectors. Enormously successful. He was a Treasury Secretary under Bill Clinton. He was a top economic advisor to Barack Obama. He was a winner of the Field Medal, which goes to the brightest economist under age 40. Go to back copies of Time magazine, and he's there on the cover.
Right.
There's one job that never worked out well for him and that he ultimately got pushed out for. That was being president of Harvard.
And what happened there?
The more you analyze it, the more you realize what a mismatch that was. What do university presidents do? They diffuse tension. They're diplomats. They're conciliators. You've got angry alumni. They're the ones who hear them out. Tension within the faculty senate, they're the ones who get it all nice again. The congressional committee that's making it a little bit hard for you on something, they're the ones who come down to Washington and endure that ritual we all know as getting grilled by the committee.
Right, right.
When Harvard went looking for a president, diplomacy was number four on their list of specs for the job. The first thing they wanted was a brilliant researcher. Well, you know what? You're moving your researcher to the sidelines. He has no time to write his papers, to do his analysis.
Yeah.
He's going to be in committee meetings the whole time. It's a badge that's useless.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They ended up getting someone who was aggressive, confrontational, provocative. He lasted for less than 5 years. The event that sent him to the exit was his presence at a conference about why there were so few women who were high achievers in science and technology. And if you look at the transcript of his remarks, he said, in essence, I'm going to provoke you. I'm going to say some things that are meant to startle you. And one of them was, perhaps there aren't that many women at the top because they just lack the ability to get there.
Wow.
Talk about a message that just sent shockwaves through the entire faculty, student mm-hmm. body, and particularly the handful of women who had made it to the top and mm-hmm. felt they had overcome a lot of prejudice and discrimination. He lost the loyalty of the faculty there and never got it back. So if you write the wrong specs, you can hire someone who's brilliant, but they're not right for your job. And that's going to be a mismatch that'll ultimately end in tears.
Early in the book, you go into detail about the shakeout that takes place for the Army Special Forces activities. They ask them to perform, challenges they put in front of them. But it's mainly about the attitudes and the perspectives of the assessors.
You're picking up on a very important point. There's a line in Jim Collins' book, Good to Great, that says the companies that really impressed them are the ones that were willing to settle for people who were less experienced, but who were very strict about character. Compromise on experience, don't compromise on character. The problem is usually when we talk about character, we use rather abstract terms that all sound great, but what do you really mean by discipline? What do you mean by focus? What do you mean by integrity? Integrity, especially, is a word that means different things mm-hmm. to different people. What I liked about the Special Forces example is you really get to see it up close.
Sure.
Some of the things they're looking for, tenacity, resilience, grit, ability to function in an ambiguous setting. And how do they do it? They give people essentially an impossible task.
Mm-hmm.
You've got an old Vietnam-era trailer missing one of its wheels. Thing weighs about a quarter ton. You've got 2.5 miles of pineland sandy road in the wilds in North Carolina. It's got an incredible friction coefficient, and the thing is just not meant to move more than 2 or 3 feet. And you've got to push this thing through the sand. They give you a bunch of equipment in the middle of the night with 5 minutes to figure out how you're going to tie some rope to it, put some support beams to it. What they don't tell you is there is no good way to do it. This is an unsolvable problem.
Right.
And what they really want to see is, what do you do next?
Mm-hmm.
What do you do in a situation where things aren't going the way you wanted? You got a lot of work ahead of you. So does the team stay a team? Does it fall apart? Who keeps working hard? Who becomes a shirker? And you learn an enormous amount about people's character and those key virtues, tenacity, grit, resilience. Who ultimately is the kind of soldier you'd want to have holed up in some remote Afghan valley for 3 months without any contact with headquarters? This is a really good way to preview it.
Auditions are a unique and powerful tool for determining who may or may not be a surprise superstar or a very committed worker. Is it possible for companies that aren't involved in show business or sports to take on this audition mentality?
In the course of researching the rare find, I was amazed how many fields you can do auditions in. Mm-hmm. If you want good computer programmers, what better way than to ask them to write code? Mm-hmm. There's no end of clever pencil and paper tests, Jeopardy-style quiz questions. But all those really do is identify people who are good at answering quiz show questions.
Right.
What you want to know is, can the person write code? Can they take on an assignment that may take 10 hours, 20 hours, and deliver not just a program that works, but one that's clearly annotated, that someone else can integrate into a system, that's efficient, that's elegant? And it's the old Peter Drucker thing, evaluate people for the job at hand. Facebook was an example that I really liked because they will run people through those kinds of literal tests. They end up getting terrific coders. A lot of other fields, sales, where mm-hmm. you can see someone sell.
Right.
How nicely the knot is tied on their tie, or how tidy their briefcase looks. In the end, it's 1% of sales. That's why programs often take in interns or trainees. You're going to discover, can they connect in front of the client?
That's like that theory of leveraging a temp to permanent arrangement you may even have in place to be more of an audition type of
exactly.
experience.
Exactly. It takes the risk out and you really get to know people. I tell the story in the book of venture capitalists mm-hmm. when they're trying to decide to finance a company. There are a lot of people who can come in and do a beautiful presentation of what their company's going to be, and you can write a very large check on the basis of one thin slice of what they are. Mm-hmm. Some of the most experienced and savvy venture capitalists slow down the process. They need to check something with a lawyer who's on vacation and mm-hmm. won't get back for a week or two. And sometimes the excuse is real. Sometimes it's a way of saying, I want to see how you work through your to-do list. You told us on July 15th that you were going to open these three new accounts and hire these six people and bring this product up into prototype. It's August 1st now. How you doing?
Right.
In essence, you're auditioning. You're seeing, is this someone who is an achiever who has a high run rate, or is this someone whose best skills are doing a whiteboard presentation and they're never going to get this company to fly?
Now, some people might say that the detailed searching proposed in the book is very time consuming. How do you respond to that?
Ask any manager what the biggest drain on their time is, and it's dealing with the bottom third of their employees. Labor rules now make it a little difficult to fire someone just because you're tired of seeing them. How much time does it take to document an underperformer, to build a recovery or rescue plan, and then to decide whether they've come up to that or not, let alone to endure mm-hmm. the litigation situation where the reasons you gave for sending them out are ones that they want to contest in court? What's it like when you're trying to build a team with one person who's not carrying the weight? I remember the first time I came into management, the best advice I got was get your hiring right. And if you do within a year, you'll have a blast. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, you will always be fixing problems and patching mistakes, and you will never get a chance to pursue greatness.
Exactly.
So yes, you have to invest a little bit up front, but the payback on the other end is 10 to 1.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. George, last question I have to wrap up is, how can people in college or recently graduated folks make themselves stand apart from the pack?
There's a practice at Google
right.
in how they do their hiring. They will often read resumes upside down, scrolling down to the last few items. What are your extracurriculars? What are your clubs, your hobbies, your nonprofits? They're looking for a deep level of commitment and achievement, someone who brings a lot of passion and a lot of ability to execute. At Sotheby's, one of the things they've discovered is you can hire the 4.0s from school if you want, but if they don't have curiosity, if they don't have a desire to get to know people, to connect with the potential customers. This isn't bubbling in answers. But if you can bring a sense of achievement, employers are going to give you the benefit of the doubt. They're going to assume that the energy you put into raising $2 million for a social cause is energy you could put into winning a $2 million account. Mm-hmm. But if you're not showing that kind of spark, there are an awful lot of other people in the market, and you need something that makes you stand out.
We've been speaking to George Anders, author of The Rare Find, Spotting Exceptional Talent Before Everyone Else. George, thanks for being with us on Edgewise today.
Thank you.
Do you understand the complexities of the coming GAAP to IFRS changeover? AMA's new seminar explores these new guidelines by examining actual financial statements prepared in accordance with IFRS and comparing the principal differences between them and United States GAAP. By taking this seminar, you will not only become familiar with IFRS, but you will be significantly ahead of the pack when the changeover occurs. For more information, visit amanet.org and type 1238 into the search box. We'd love to get your feedback on today's program. You can either email us at podcast@amanet.org or call 800-697-3406. Your comments may become part of a future program. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.